You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is South Carolina wide receiver Xavier Leggett, a man who had 42 receptions in his first 4 years as a Gamecock and then reeled off a cool 33 catches for 15 plus yards in 2023.
Huge fan of Leggett just for how he got here to be considered as a top two, top three round selection here. In his first four seasons, only 423 yards, a rare fifth year breakout, like a true fifth year breakout.
At the same school.
Yes, at the same school. Now, how he got there was exceptional. He went to a very small high school at South Carolina. He actually played quarterback there. So then he was, I mean, his numbers in high school were absolutely ridiculous. Unfortunately, he loses both of his parents in high school. He has a motorcycle accident at South Carolina. The COVID season happens. There's a coaching change. And all this time, Xavier Leggett is relearning how to play wide receiver. So I think that's like the reason why he was a late breakout. But for a late breakout, he really broke out. I mean, 105 yards per game, 3.2 yards per route run, and then also he's an exceptional kick returner as well. So a crazy athlete, an even crazier story.
It really is a unique profile. In a class that has a lot of them, this is probably the one that tops the list. Let's just go back and some numbers that matter. 6'1", 221 pounds. At that 220-pound weight, a 4.3940, okay? A 91st percentile broad jump, a 79th percentile vertical jump. I mean, we're going to record a Xavier Worthy video here in a moment, and it's why I love the wide receiver position, because Xavier Worthy and Xavier Leggett are listed and compared against each other. There's a 56-pound difference between these two dudes. It's why, you know, a wide receiver is not a wide receiver is not a wide receiver. He played the season at 22 years of age and was an athletic freak. So, yeah, I mean, let's dive into it, Hayden. Where do you think that he thrives or could succeed on an NFL field?
He was manufactured a lot of touches, and I kind of liked him in that role. He was played on the outside on 65% of his snaps, but he wasn't like this traditional X wide receiver by any means, despite having like the size of that. Actually, a little more compact of a frame. He's completely rocked up. I saw like a little bit less agile version of Deebo Samuel. And that's not just the South Carolina numbers. They would use him in the backfield. They would use him in the screen game, mesh routes to get him kind of cooking after the catch. And I thought I liked him in that role. At the same time, though, he can win down the field. I'm not sure if I saw that much in between those two areas, but he made some really acrobatic high point catches. There was a couple post routes where I thought he created great separation down the field. So he's kind of like this mystery where I can see him winning way down the field on occasion, but for whatever reason, I kind of liked him in this like manufactured kind of touch part of the game, which I was not really expecting when I looked at his size.
Yeah, and there were honestly about three or four catches the entire season where they asked him to work the middle of the field about like 10 to 15 yards. Mm-hmm. And there were moments, though, Hayden, where I saw him, you know, have a release off the line, lean into the cornerback that was there in man coverage, snap his head and create that sliver of separation and then sustain it while working up the middle of the field. Like, that is more than just an athlete stuff. And he was showing it, granted, obviously in his fifth season. And I know you talked about his story coming from high school and then the difficulties at South Carolina. I actually went back and watched a bunch of his other 4 years at South Carolina. And like the first couple, his hands were just awful. That likely led to a total lack of trust with him and the coaching staff. The quarterback being awful before Spencer Rattler did not help. And then when you got to 2022, when Spencer Rattler was there, he dropped a lot of like adjustment catches or tip balls that then led to interceptions on off frame balls. So again, because of that, I think it prohibited the coaching staff from allowing him to have extended playing time game in and game out. There were still flashes, including like this crazy body twisting catch against Notre Dame in that final game of 2022. And then that perfectly coincided with his first game in 2023, where he destroyed the North Carolina Tar Heels, like the best player on that field for both teams. So you even dive into if it was just like a one season profile, right? 6.4 yards after catch per reception is awesome to include that 13 average depth of target that you talked about. A 3.15 yards per route run is basically fifth best in this entire wide receiver class. Credited with just two drops this year, despite what we saw in the first 4 years, 47 of his catches went for first down. So Hayden, you have this magnificent 1 year profile. And then a rough four-year one. Again, this is one of those weird statistical anomalies that frequently does not work out in the NFL.
Yes.
But you and I watch him, and we can definitely see how it does work out in the NFL.
Helping his chances here, 26 yards per kick return. And now we have these new NFL kick return rules and you know, hip drop tackle and stuff. So someone like Xavier Leggett, I don't know how he doesn't look a little bit better just based off of the rule changes. The hands part, I keep going back and forth with. Not credited with the drops, but I'm not sure if he's like a consistent catcher yet. There's a couple times where he's catching it with his body. There's a couple bobbled catches in the mix there as well. And I think one of the reasons why they manufactured so many touches for him is because it's a little bit easier to work out in space underneath like that and not having to make some crazy plays down the field. So I thought what I came back with, you can, if you really want to squint, like Cordarrelle Patterson is kind of like a weird body where really dominant in special teams. Obviously, we can't expect him to be that dominant on special teams, but kind of used as a wide receiver, as a running back at times. You can see that if it doesn't work out, Chase Claypool was a great athlete that just didn't really understand the nuances of wide receiver. Maybe Xavier Leggett could kind of do some of that. Hopefully he's not the knucklehead that Chase Claypool is. But the one thing I kept going back with was the Deebo Samuel stuff, because he's so hard to tackle out in space. There's just one huge difference between Deebo and Xavier Leggett. He's just not agile enough. He's like almost like too leggy. He would kind of get chopped down at times. I thought that there was a couple times where he could make a guy miss with some wiggle, and Xavier Leggett just doesn't have it like that. But the size and the speed, when he has a little bit of space to work with, that's where you can get the big touches like you see with Deebo Samuel.
I have a proposition. Why don't we put him on the Rashee Rice performance plan?
Sure.
Of maybe his rookie year, turn him into that underneath, leg it out, yards after catch player. And then like, as the season goes along, we ask him to run a few more legit big boy routes down the field on the outside. And we'll obviously see what that development turns into. I think that's a perfect example of what Xavier Leggett can be. Now, that is on the Kansas City Chiefs, a well-coached organization that has a plan and enacts it for a player. If you go to another roster that, you know, is losing and not successful and not with the best quarterback in the NFL, and they kind of force you into roles based on injuries or what have you that you might not be ready for, then that can obviously like derail production that you could have in that same sentiment. But to me, that would be, I know their frames aren't exactly the same. Rice is like 6'5", 204 pounds. So obviously Xavier Leggett brings some more thickness to the party than Rashee Rice does. But man, in those small samples that we did see some insane body control, and we did see some legitimate, again, lean into you, snap it off to create separation on difficult routes, it gives me a lot of hope and a lot of want for this to like turn into like a legit player. Because if he does hit with this body type and his power and his speed on top of it, I think he might be like everyone's favorite player in
years. Yeah, I could totally see that. I keep going back and forth. I settled in with like a late round two grade, which is kind of like the intriguing dart throw range. You have to have a plan for this type of player. And I think that's kind of where I'm at. But most players in that range just aren't 6'1", 220 that can run sub 4.4. Like those players are just hard to find outside of round one. So I think that's kind of where I want to middle this a little bit. But once we like know where he's actually drafted, I think for fantasy purposes, I can kind of paint the picture if he's going to be a bust or if he actually has a chance to playing time, kind of be somebody that we truly care about.
The two names for skeptics, and I understand why there could be skepticism here, that they bring up are in the last 2 years. The first one being Treylon Burks coming out of Arkansas. I want to remind you that Treylon Burks, where he was at his best at Arkansas, was in the slot, kind of on those manufactured touches. And Xavier Leggett just this past season was only in the slot 34% of his snaps. The other name, and I was victim to this, was Jonathan Mingo. I will add that Jonathan Mingo did not have a single season that was nearly close to as productive as what we just saw from Xavier Leggett. So in those ways, I think that comparison also falls short too.
Yeah, I think that Leggett has a little bit more juice on tape than what I saw from Mingo. But also like late round two, and that's kind of where I had Mingo, these guys bust all the time. Like these are complete dart throw range. And I don't think anybody loved Jonathan Mingo last year. He was just like the wide receiver five, wide receiver six, because it was a bad draft class. Like I have some like positive spins for Xavier Leggett, and I still have him outside my top 10 because there's too many other guys in this draft class that I really, really liked. So I hope that he works out because he's really fun to watch. Obviously, his story is fantastic. And I think there will be some moments, even if he's not a consistent player, where there'll be a manufactured touch that actually hits, and this will be a special highlight type of player.
This is Florida State wide receiver Keon Coleman.
Probably made one of the best catches I've ever seen working over the middle of the field. That's kind of where we start with Keon Coleman, 6'3", 213 pounds, played on the outside at Florida State. It was in a different type of role at Michigan State. And I think that's kind of where we need to begin this. He's only 21 years old. And from me looking at his tape, I'm not sure if we found the exact right role that he'll actually play in the NFL. So this is a big projection. Number's not that great. Testing is up and down, but some of the film, some of the wow plays really keep you.
This is a rare profile. And I'm not saying that from the standpoint of everything is amazing. So it's unique to see it. It's just uncommon. Let's put it that way. So there's a whole bunch of things we need to hit on in this conversation. As you said, 6'2", 213 pounds, hit a slow 40-yard dash at 4.61. But let's keep in mind that just the 40 does not mean a player is a bad athlete, because you look at his jumps, they were fantastic. 79th and 83rd percentile, as Hayden loves to talk about. He had the fastest GPS in the gauntlet drill of any wide receiver in his group. And as you said, over the last 2 years, two premier programs. In 2022, 58 receptions for 800 yards and 7 touchdowns at Michigan State, playing next to Jaden Reed, who he outproduced in that one season. And this past year at FSU, 50 receptions, 650 yards, 11 touchdowns, next to another NFL prospect in Johnny Wilson. So Hayden, since this is an uncommon profile, where do you want to start? Let's do some positives here. Where do you think that Keon Coleman wins?
So he's definitely a contested catch guy, and he made some just dramatic plays at the catch point up in the air. I also thought that Florida State threw him some contested catches that had no business going his way, and he's not going to be an elite separator, but I do think that he has very consistent, capable hands, and I think that's one of the reasons why he was so good in that gauntlet drill at the combine. Is I think that when he's working over the middle of the field, he can pluck the ball out of the air. And I think that's a good part of his game. According to PFF, they have this speed metric based off of the gameplay. And he was in the 93rd percentile. So even though he was at 4.61 40 guy, and that's just really bad, 23rd percentile, weight adjusted, he plays a little bit faster. I think that's because he actually trusts his hands, and he's not afraid of to work over the middle of the field when they actually let him do that. So that's why I'm kind of hoping that he transitioned to the middle part of the field. I think power slot could be an option for him, because I thought there was too many reps where he was just kind of hugging the sideline, just throwing these prayer targets up to him. And I think that he has a little bit more fluidity and more confident hands in being stuck in that type of role.
I saw that fluidity actually early in his routes. I think he carries his weight very well with smooth transitions early on in his routes. And the separation to me is better there. However, like you said, so often he was glued to the sideline, a lot of longer developing routes. Mm-hmm. And because of that, and somewhat because of the quarterback play too, that's why so many of his downfield targets became contested, where when you do have a dude who runs in the 4.6s, obviously a corner is going to be able to close that gap and then contest down the field. The contested targets are a huge talking point when it comes to Keon Coleman, because again, 6'3" frame, you want these to be almost 50-50 situations. No one saw more contested targets last season than Keon Coleman in this draft class. 30. He had 30, and he only came down with 10 of them. But I want to dive into those a little bit more, because if you just look in their FSU's second, third, and fourth games of last season, he had 10 contested catch opportunities. He only caught one of them, right? So just in that three-game stretch, basically derailed whatever efficiency or percentage you could have in those moments. And to me, he should have been better in a lot of those. Many of those were true 50-50 situations. But then as the season went on, we know that the Seminoles had some quarterback issues, and really their offense kind of unraveled, I felt. It was simply, hey, the primary option is not open. Let's just hoof it down to Keon Coleman 30 plus yards down the field and see what he can do. See if he can come up with a magical moment. And so while those might be listed by PFF or any other charting site as contested catches, they aren't really fair to Keon Coleman. So I think it goes both ways. Again, in that three game sample, he should have been better in those situations. But later on, just to add counting stats on top of it, he was kind of put in an unwinnable situation in many of them too.
And I saw the same thing early on in his route. I actually think that he plays with burst, which explains why he has those 80th percentile jumps. His short area burst, I think, is totally fine. To me, his athleticism, it fails him with the long speed. And that's where some of the separation stuff, I do see it on these, some of these deeper routes. He's not going to keep his distance against these corners, or certainly the yards after the catch ability in the second level is not quite as good as some of these speedier guys. But because he has that short area burst, and because I do think he can play through some contact because he is so size dominant and he's not afraid of taking a hit, that's where I can kind of see a little bit of a slot role from him working over the middle of the field. Maybe you get him on some slot fades on occasion, but we've seen a lot of guys kind of transition into this. I think like Juju Smith-Schuster, Mohamed Sanu, you throw out Tim Patrick. I think some of those type of body types, I think you can kind of see that with Keon Coleman. Now, that requires a huge projection because he really was not used like that at Michigan State or at Florida State, but he's also 21 years old. So I think this is going to be the difficult part with Keon Coleman. I was wowed at times by him, but I think you have to kind of keep him in this round two bucket because you just don't know exactly how you're going to use him. And quite frankly, Michigan State, they didn't throw him any screens because they got him with Jaden Reed. And then at Florida State, he was a screen guy.
Yeah.
And that wasn't really effective for him either.
Yeah, let's talk about that because, again, another layer of this weird profile was that the Seminoles made him the screen slash RPO guy, and that's just absurd to do. Mm-hmm. There were 34 screens on FSU's team last year. He had 20 of them, okay? No other pass catcher had more than five.
Yeah.
And it's because they ran a lot of two wide receiver sets and, again, RPOs off of that and screens. On top of this, he was also their punt returner. He had 25 punt returns. So if you package those together, it kind of showed you how reliant Florida State might have thought they needed to be on his playmaking ability. Because I know you can throw out one or two or three examples of him hurdling a dude or taking a catch down the field. To me, he is not a short area yards after catch player. And so those, you know, 20 screen targets that he did get probably impacted those numbers and impacted his total numbers on top of it. Again, that is just kind of an unwinnable situation for him to be thrown in when FSU, again, they had these two giants on the outside. And I guess in some ways they thought he was the more of the playmaker and more nimble guy. But at the same time, obviously, Johnny Wilson's a interesting and intriguing prospect too.
He certainly is. That's for another video. But yeah, with Keon Coleman, he's too tall to be that shifty. I think his yards after the catch ability is kind of shrugging off that first tackle.
He needs some momentum. And obviously in those screens early on, it's like stop, start, and I'm trying to make something happen. Again, it was an unfortunate situation that he was forced into being. Mm-hmm.
And then the other part of this is he didn't run that many in-breaking routes, out-breaking routes in general. Now, I see it at times that he does have the required knee bend to potentially be able to do that. And he will have to do that if he is going to transition in the slot. But once again, it's this profile. We're talking about 6'3", 213, the screen guy and the punt returner. Like I remember like watching Drake London, who's a huge guy, and he was the screen guy at USC. And I'm like, that's a bullish signal that you're that big and they still want to manufacture touches for him. But the difference is Drake London was exceptional at doing those. And Keon Coleman was very hit and miss. But at the same time, it's like, coaches see something with him. He has got this basketball background. He still is only 21 years old. So while we have all these like flaws with Keon Coleman, it goes back to the separation. I ultimately think it's just the speed that he plays with. I do understand why you can see in a couple years with some development, maybe a different coach finds the right role for him and then he can be a productive player.
Yeah, I did think there was a bit too much movement at the top of his routes. Like he has almost this rudder that he kind of uses to windmill and make turns. And it's just a lot of stuff without that much movement that he needs to, you know, create that almost if he's a second or third read to create that sliver of space for his quarterback in those scenarios. Yeah. I mean, when I talked about that three game sample, which tanked his averages, when you talk about contested players who are kind of stuck to the boundary, we can go back to Kelvin Benjamin. We can go to even Gabriel Davis more recently, right? These guys are the Kelvin Benjamin coasters, the Gabe Davis coasters, because it can be so wonky and hit or miss week in and week out, knowing what you can get in those situations. I will add, though, on top of that, Gabriel Davis, despite those inconsistencies and who he always has been, just got paid a lot of cheddar to be a big outside downfield X wide receiver. So like this role is important, even if maybe the production or the success of those plays can be hit or miss on a weekly basis.
He does a lot of the dirty work stuff. He's not going to be afraid to block and stuff. So if he does hang out on the perimeter, does not move to the slot, I do think that there is a Gabe Davis kind of nature to his game. The production was just not there. 55th percentile age adjusted production at Florida State. Very worrisome. 1.7 yards per out run is really bad. Only 7% first down rate per route. That's also among the worst in the group. It's like him and A.D. Mitchell, who are comped in the first, second rounds, that their just production does not equate to that. But I think it goes back to just, we know that he's a good athlete in like some areas, and then he's also very young and played at Power 5 school. So these type of guys typically go fairly high in the draft still.
And his total EPA was awful. His success rate was awful too. I mean, I guess my question is, Hayden, how rare would it be for a prospect with that statistical profile to hit?
Well, we see some of these guys type it. The big guys, I think, have a chance of hitting. The Power 5 guys have a chance of hitting. I would say that the quarterback play, even though they went undefeated, was very hit and miss. And like, if you're trying to catch passes, he also had Trey Benson. They have a tight end prospect. We talked about Johnny Wilson. The quarterback would run around a lot as well. So there's some like other kind of like touch competition issues that Keon Coleman was facing more so than other type of players. But yeah, he's not a consistent player yet. And I saw some of that stuff at the release point. I saw it at the bend, a couple extra steps here and there, a couple 50-50 balls that he wasn't able to pull down with. So, yeah, this is very much like the primary reason why he wasn't that productive. But hopefully with some more coaching and a couple more years, he's not 23 like some of these other prospects. Maybe at that point you can kind of have a smoother transition to the game.
Yeah, I guess where I see his traits and where he wins, I don't know if he can develop like an all-around game. You know, so he almost has to be a specialist in some ways that is really good in those areas. And that can lend itself to obviously two wide receiver sets and three wide receiver sets. I mean, Tim Patrick was the example that I came to. And I know people, it's almost hit or miss if they like that comparison or if they don't. Mm-hmm. Let's remember that Tim Patrick had two seasons of back-to-back 750 receiving yards. Obviously, he had very unfortunate injuries since then. He's a guy who did play on the outside. And then when Nathaniel Hackett took over, they wanted to move him into that power slot role. So I think depending on the offense, but you know, a power slot is not for everyone. You know, it's a very situational thing that an offense is going to pick versus the movement, the jitterbug, the separation type. So it's not going to be, I mean, to me, he's a flavor that's not going to be for everyone because again, he can't do everything, you know? And I think a lot of teams, while we do talk about basketball rooms and basketball lineups of, hey, big bodied X, hey, separator, hey, here's your slot type. He's almost pigeonholed with that to me. And maybe I'll be wrong with that, but that's just how I view him right now.
I also don't think he's going to be like the X receiver because he's like his ability at the line of scrimmage right now is just not up to winning on the line of scrimmage. So he might have to play the other outside role where he's not on the line of scrimmage. He might do this power slot role. So yeah, it's a very intriguing profile because of the wild plays. But like you said, there's a lot of question marks. I also wouldn't be surprised if he is somebody that's on the field a lot and like helpful in like NFL ways. That doesn't necessarily translate to like fantasy production. And we kind of see some of these players that just like they block well, they know what to do. And those type of players are like in NFL lineups, but we're not like super stoked for them in fantasy. I wouldn't be surprised if Keon Coleman's a little bit of that as well.
If he does hit and everything is successful, Brandon Marshall's like the top comparison I would throw out there. So like a Alan Lazard, Tim Patrick, Brandon Marshall spectrum is what I'm working on.
I've seen like Michael Thomas popped up there because he wasn't super athletic.
Yeah, but like Michael Thomas and his just movement in his routes, especially, you know, the 0 to 12 yard range, like was nearly special stuff. I am totally with you where the Keon Coleman, they didn't allow him to work in the 10 to 19 yard range nearly enough, especially working over the middle of the field. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think just Michael Thomas made most of his money kind of within 15 yards. And I think that Keon Coleman could kind of do some of that stuff. Now, Michael Thomas has like one of the best slant routes you'll ever possibly imagine. We have no evidence that Keon Coleman could pull that off. But if his athleticism does translate in that way, that would be like the kind of range. And he was also a second round pick as well.
This is Florida wide receiver Ricky Pearsall.
He's an elite athlete. He's not an elite athlete for a white dude. He's not an elite athlete for a slot receiver. He's an elite athlete for NFL terms. 4.4 140, 97th percentile vertical jump, 96th percentile three cone, 90th percentile short shuttle. He's 23 years old, but he was really productive. He's got a little inside-outside versatility. And ultimately, I thought that he's one of the better route runners in the entire draft.
I think people will be shocked to know that he's 6'1", 189 pounds. Like, he just looks smaller to me a bit on NFL field. And I actually think that goes back to his 20th percentile arm length, 17th percentile wingspan. But Hayden, I think the big question is he just a slot receiver or can he be more than that? And I'll throw out some numbers that kind of back one of those statements up. 61 of 93 targets this past season were out of the slot. 98 of 156 over the last two seasons. That's including playing with Anthony Richardson. However, it's not your typical slot player because we're talking about a dude who had an ADOT, an average depth of target, of 11 yards this past season. Mm-hmm. And then when you play with Anthony Richardson, he had a 17.3 average depth of target. I mean, 55 of his 63 targets were 10-plus yards down the field. So it was almost an intermediate and deep slot wide receiver versus the normal short jitterbugness that we get at the position.
We've seen this with Christian Kirk, the vertical slot option can win on the outside on occasion. I think that's kind of where I'm at with Ricky Pearsall. There are some times where I think that this catch radius and the 189 pounds, it's not that much. I think there were some times where you kind of get pushed out of the way on some downfield routes, but I thought his ball tracking was exceptional. His hands are very good. He made some, I mean, maybe the best catch you'll ever see, period.
His catch rate on 10 plus yard targets was actually the best in this draft class. Again, we're seeing guys who are 6'3", 6'5", 6'1". He obviously is the best in this class in that area. And like you said, his adjustments, either back shoulder, throwing it off, one hand stabs. There were a lot of errant throws, and I love Anthony Richardson, but some errant throws over the last 2 years, and he did his best to work through them. That is for sure. And again, because of those numbers, like I don't want people to get upset if someone else does call him a slot wide receiver and they believe he can be an outside wide receiver, which he might be able to do. I think the Christian Kirk one, I hadn't thought of that. To me, that makes so much sense, right? Again, as someone who almost was a do everything type player at Texas A&M, but found his best bet as, again, this intermediate downfield slot type wide receiver. He's not going to break a whole bunch of tackles. Did not do that often the last 2 years. But man, he is such a fun player to watch. I mean, 26 and 24, 15 plus yard gains over the last 2 years. But what twists your brain is sometimes when he is body catching, he does that same like hopping midsection catch that like a Wes Welker or Julian Edelman did. Yeah. So it's so easy to compare him to those guys.
Yeah.
Let's not forget Julian Edelman played with Danny Amendola. Julian Edelman was an outside guy that also played in the slot. If that's the career path that Ricky Pearsall takes, holy hell, we're in for a great player.
I saw Edelman pop up when I was doing my like statistical comps based off the combine because Edelman's agility drills were fantastic. Same thing with Ricky Pearsall. I think Edelman is a little bit more physical like after the catch than what Ricky Pearsall has shown. One of the comps that I came up with was Jerry Jeudy. Now, Jerry Jeudy has been on the outside and has not been that successful. When Jerry Jeudy's in the slot, I think he's actually a decent player that's got paid a ton of money. I think there were some times where Ricky Pearsall would kind of oversell some of his routes, but when he's actually in control, the route running is really, really nice. So I think that Ricky Pearsall, I saw him on these option routes from the slot, in breaking and out breaking routes from the slot where he has some space to maneuver on each side. I think that's when you see his agility and then this burst on the first step really pop off. And we're talking about all this downfield production where he's pretty efficient there. Last year on his targets between 0 and 10 yards downfield, he got 16 of 17. He had an 80% success rate when he was thrown targets, catchable targets from the slot. So he can win in the underneath part of this game as well.
Yeah, the downfield stuff last year was interesting because it felt like a whole bunch of it was double moves or slot fades or fake screens where he basically was almost manufactured. Mm-hmm. But then again, going back to his 2022 work, everything because that offense was pushed almost 5 yards further down the field, and he was still super comfortable in that area. Like, the diagonal crossers from one side of the field to the other are so deadly with him. And again, how he makes these unreal adjustments. He can lose, again, because of his arm length and, you know, corners can work through him. But man, he gives it a great try in terms of the body control that he adds on top of it. How dare you put that Jerry Judy juju on him, because I thought that his, again, just fluidity and body control on top of it was, it's always what scared me about like an animated route runner of mm-hmm. Jerry Judy. I thought that Pearsall played like much more composed with everything. I mean, some of the names that popped up to me, the Giants version of Steve Smith, Colts, Anthony Gonzalez, who was a first round pick back in the day with Peyton Manning. I think the athletic profile that he brings to the table, like if you just watch him, you might think this is an average athlete. We see one of these guys every single year. Man, the athletic profile on top of it kind of differs him from a whole bunch of the other types that we've seen in this second, third round territory, like the Wandale Robinsons or the Josh Downs. And I love Josh Downs as a prospect. This might be like an extra gear on top of that.
Totally different gear. Now, for some potential limitations, I think statistically, these are fifth-year players, 23 years old. This is kind of an iffy kind of landing spot. And then also this last season, only 58th percentile in his pass game production, like the team share of Florida's receiving yards, only 58th percentile. His age-adjusted production in general is 41st percentile. So there was something up where he wasn't completely dominating throughout his entire career. But whenever I watched him on the tape, you can just see the athletic traits kind of pop off. So I kind of liked him more in the slot role. I think he will be able to win on the outside, but I think that the motion routes and some screen stuff to him, option routes on occasion, I think that you're going to get all that type of stuff, and you're going to see the athleticism after the catch in those type of circumstances, not as much so like breaking tackles, working over the middle.
Like if, and I know this is an outlier draft class when it comes to wide receivers, because there's so much talent here. By the way, go and watch all of our other videos. We have prospect profiles on basically every single one of them. But like if Wandale Robinson is the 43rd pick, or John Mechie's the 44th pick, right? Or we even go to like Sky Moore as the 54th overall selection. And that's just in 2022. You can go down to like D. Eskridge, Rondale Moore. Like
he JSN went in the first round.
He is a tier above all the guys that I mentioned. So like, again, any other year, I think like maybe the first wide receiver off the board at the start of round two is in his possible future. Heck, it still might be. I could see a team falling in love with Ricky Pearsall, because again, I loved Anthony Richardson as a prospect, and just seeing the connection those two guys had was something special. And I could, again, see and envision NFL front office being like, hey, this is exactly what our young quarterback needs at the NFL level.
Right now, he's my wide receiver 8. I have a round 2 grade on him. I'm thinking about doing an early round 2 grade on him, because just the athletic traits, like you said, compared to the other slot wide receivers, you typically just don't get this agility and speed, and then 97th percentile of vertical as well. So a big fan of his game. I think slot is his destination spot, and I think that's totally fine.
This is Texas wide receiver Xavier Worthy.
The Dynasty community loves him because he broke out early. The NFL Combine bros, they love Xavier Worthy because, you know, breaks the record at 4.21 in the 40-yard dash. And then the film watchers are kind of caught in between all of them. The stat that kind of stood out to me, 39% of his 75 receptions came behind the line of scrimmage. I think there's a chance, because of his speed and the way that he can kind of adjust his body control, that he can be one of the true like cheat codes. And now will require one of the fun offense coordinators to get his hands hold of them.
There's so many numbers that matter in this. Let's take it in a few different directions. First, we'll just talk with the size, okay? 5'11", 165 pounds is what he showed up at the NFL Combine. As you said, did run a 4.21 40 at that 165-pound weight with a 1.49 10-yard split. As we talked about in our Xavier Leggett video, there's a 56-pound difference between the two guys at the same position. But on top of that, Xavier Worthy, a 95th percentile vertical jump, a 92nd percentile broad jump. I will, disclaimer here, say that Tank Dell, because of what he did this past season, might be the comparison for everyone out there when they go and watch Xavier Worthy. And I get it. I will add, Tank Dell is kind of the exception and not the rule of what we have seen over the last decade or two when looking at wide receivers in the league. I think one main difference when it gets to this is that Tank Dell does play bigger to his size frequently, and Xavier Worthy can be a bit hit or miss I have more to say on that, but I'll give you the floor before I do.
The other layer is that the NFL seems to be more creative now. And we just talked about this, using these cheap motions where you were running basically at full speed at the time of the snap. They hit him in the slot on 40% of his snaps. 21% of his targets were in the screen game. You can get these bunch sets. So I think that there's this type of player used to kind of just be like, please win downfield and just use your speed, and you're kind of isolated out there. I think now there's just a better kind of utility for this type of player, even though I see some of the same weaknesses in the contested catches. I thought him working over the middle of the field, kind of alligator armed at some points, which totally understand. You're 165-pound player out there, totally get it. But I do think that there's just more of an appetite for this type of player now, back compared to like the John Ross days, where it's just like, oh, you're this fast. Well, good luck, buddy. You just got to run downfield.
I think Xavier Worthy has that same mentality that Tank Dell does of, I want to play bigger, but at some point, like 165 pounds just simply limits you. Like, again, with that said, to me, he doesn't shy away actually from a lot of middle field contact, but that doesn't mean he's great at it. You know, like, he will make those tough short slants, or there was even like a fourth and one or a fourth and three where he was lining up behind a wide receiver and he was a dude they gave the football to try to get across the goal line. Mm-hmm. Granted, again, it was kept short. He doesn't shy away from contact when finishing off runs, especially when he's like, I'm sure you saw this too, tagged along the boundary. Like, when there's nowhere for him to go, he's not just someone who's going to step out of bounds. Mm-hmm. He will try to run over your face, but often that leads to him being body slammed.
Yes.
Again, he doesn't actively play small. In fact, I kind of think he has a dog in him. He just is small. And I think it mostly pops up when playing with someone like Quinn Ewers, who either would underthrow him or went on these crossing routes, throw behind him, or even just to his back shoulder. Xavier Worthy does his best to make an attempt off his frame for these catches. But again, because his frame is so frail and he is this light, it's just so much easier for these cornerbacks to work either through him or around him and disrupt the catch point and disrupt his hands. And oftentimes that led to drops or incompletions, despite, I think, the urge to win physically. He just can't do it at times.
He had only 6 of his 23 deep targets be caught. I think some of that was Quinn Ewers just straight up missing him. Sometimes Quinn Ewers throwing him into that contested situation where he only caught 5 of his 21 contested opportunities, according to PFF. So yeah, it's a catch radius issue with Xavier Worthy. Now, the positives for him, though, is I think that this guy can create separation downfield, not just with his speed. I thought for this type of player, and there's been a lot of misses with this type of player, I think that his tempo and ability to stop and start and kind of just keep these defenders on their toes, I thought that was really, really good. So typically on these like 165-pound players, I'm like, good luck with it. There's a lot more Tutu Atwells than there are Tank Dells. But I think that Xavier Worthy like kind of has it. And you said that the dog levels are there. I think that his body control is really, really good, where on occasion you can get him on these post routes, corner routes, go routes, a curl route even against off coverage will be a nightmare with Xavier Worthy. But I think the bread and butter for him at the very worst, if he goes to like the Shanahan, the McDaniels, those type of players, that
Rams,
those type of teams that use these guys side to side, I think Xavier Worthy is going to absolutely cook on those type of plays.
Yeah, and now that Jordan Rodriguez has termed it the shart motion based on what Mike McDaniel and Matt LaFleur and all these guys have been calling it, more and more teams, you're even seeing someone not from that tree like Ben Johnson utilize it. So guarantee you in 2024, we're going to see those short out motions far more often. And yeah, again, he has the willingness to play outside of his frame. I thought he was just so much more successful going up versus out with it, if that makes sense. You also talked about his production profile. It's been incredible over the last 3 years. He had 123 targets in 2023, and 119 and 105. So over 103 straight seasons. He had 71 plays of 15 plus yards through 3 seasons of college football. And yeah, as you said, he had 32 targets behind the line of scrimmage this past season, but he also had 39 targets, 20 plus yards down the field. It really is a fascinating dilemma that you have here in a bit, because you don't see many players like this have tons of success as like a week in, week out, dependable type player that can be a bit of high variance. But I'm with you on like legit route running stuff. And I think we saw this against BYU and maybe some other teams this past season. One false step, and this can be early on in his route, he instantly creates 3 yards of separation. Instantly 3 yards of separation. And I liked him so much more than I was expecting to just based on that 40 time, because again, he has that attitude. He has that want to play bigger. And I even wonder, like, if he does play closer, like maybe 10 pounds heavier, maybe he lost his weight. Cause you know, is there really a difference between 175 and 165, right, especially when you're trying to break the combine record in the 40 yard dash?
The bit of winning the record combine it's a good bit. Yeah, it's a good bit, certainly. Now, going back to the production, he led Texas in receiving as a freshman, a sophomore, and then a junior. His like freshman season numbers were really good. Then more competition comes over. You get A.D. Mitchell over there. The tight end starts breaking out. And then his final season numbers, this junior season, are not exceptional. 2.1 yards per route run is like pretty forgettable. Sub 10% first down rate per route run, that's below average. If you remove those screens, only his targets had a 51% success rate, less than 0.1 EPA per route, removing those screens as well.
Man, I think some of that's on his quarterback. I really do think it's on his quarterback, because there were so many plays where Quinn Ewers just didn't unleash enough, or whoever the backup was at times too. And he legit had to like walk 10 yards or sometimes work back to the football when just a decently thrown pass would have equaled a 50, 60 yard touchdown.
Yeah, it goes back 23 deep targets, only caught six of them. If that's 9 or 10 of them, that you can throw on another 100, 150 yards to his profile. So I think that the numbers guys out there that love his early season or early career production, I'm more with that than compared to this like last season, because A.D. Mitchell's there. I don't really like the Texas offense. There was times where I thought that Xavier Worthy was taking plays off, which makes me kind of think that maybe it's like a Texas Decemic issue where they're not, there's like half field reads and all that type of stuff. So it's not the cleanest profile for Xavier Worthy, but at the end of the day, we're talking about a superstar athlete, productive from day one, Texas type of player. I think he's got inside and outside versatility. And I think that with the NFL, they are ready to use this type of player. So a couple comps for you. Marquise Brown is somebody that has won on the outside in the NFL. There's some elements to his game. I think Marquise Brown's a little more physical than Worthy is.
Let's talk through some of these names, because here are the outside wide receivers at his weight at the NFL Combine. Okay. So Tutu Atwell was 155. JJ Nelson, if you remember that name, was 156. Tank Dell, 165. Hollywood Brown, 166. DeSean Jackson, 169. Devontae Smith, 170. And Travis Benjamin, 172. I mean, Devontae Smith plays the game differently than any of those other guys. So let's just take him out of this list. The Tank Dell, DeSean Jackson-ness of this is really intriguing to me. Because again, when actually watching him and not just looking at he's fast and at this size, he plays the game quite similarly to how Tank Dell did it last year. Again, I just think he was less successful when corners would work through his frame than Tank Dell was as a rookie immediately in the NFL.
Well, you listed Marquise Brown's combine size, but just by watching the last couple of years, he looks a little bit thicker than like that listed weight. So I think we can kind of envision that with Xavier Worthy. A couple other names, Brandon Cooks is somewhat similar. And I think he was kind of used with some of this motion stuff recently. And then like the one that I actually really liked is T.Y. Hilton, because I thought T.Y. Hilton's body control down the field, I thought that's what I'm kind of seeing with Xavier Worthy. With these like corners on these deep post routes, when they're kind of on the back of their heels, it's kind of over. So that's kind of the player I'm picturing here. So I went early round two grade. I actually have him ranked ahead of A.D. Mitchell, despite the size difference, I just think that his body control is going to be the difference making part versus the John Rosses and all these other names that kind of busted with this type of profile.
Yeah, I mean, you cannot give him a runway. Like, you can't, or else he's gone. If it's off coverage or press bail, good luck. And I actually think we got pretty good markers to see over the last 2 years of what he's like when someone is in his hip pocket, because we got to watch him versus Alabama's defense. And obviously, when a corner is able to stick with him in his hip pocket, it does slow him down. He certainly does not play at 4.2 speed in that case. But I want to keep bringing Tank Dell back into this, because I actually think that offense would be extremely successful with him. You know, we're talking about deep play action, basically two-man routes where that Texans Bobby Slowick would use almost max protection at times. And so if your quarterback gets 3.5, 4 seconds to throw, Xavier Worthy is going to create some level of separation on 3.5, 4 seconds down the field, especially on these crossing routes. Because if it's man coverage with single high safety, because again, they're loading the box to stop the run, the guy's not going to be able to stick with him running across the field. So if he's implemented into that offense, he can definitely be a two wide receiver set outside guy in those environments. And I would be tuning in every single weekend to watch it.
I believe Les Snead, he was at his house watching the combine, and he turned to his wife and said that, oh, this guy that's about to run right now is the fastest wide receiver I've ever seen on tape. And then what do you know? There it is. So it does translate. Like, you can see the actual speed translate on his game film. Hopefully his NFL quarterback could actually throw him the ball on time into his breadbasket.
Question. As purely a downfield playmaker, do you think he's better than like Jameson Williams at that specific role?
So I regrettably had Jameson ranked like a tier above, but what I've kind of learning now is Jameson Williams just didn't have like the schemed up touches and stuff that provide some baseline of a floor like someone like Xavier Worthy has. So I think that Xavier Worthy will be a better pro than Jameson Williams. Jameson Williams also, though, has a little bit more kind of catch point to his game. It's still not the greatest, but he's just a little bit taller than Xavier Worthy. But I like Xavier Worthy's just ability to kind of win in other ways, where Jameson Williams is like only a deep threat. Xavier Worthy can be that, but he also could be some other things for an offense.
Love that. Okay, this class is amazing. You need to check out all of our wide receiver profiles because of it. Because again, every single wide receiver in this group feels different in some way, and each one has calling cards that can make them potentially special in the NFL. So go click that subscribe button, hit the thumbs up, watch all of our videos on the channel. We'll check on the next one.